Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And it's time now for our weekly gathering. We're going to discuss all the big stories of the week. And joining me in the studio, we have Rose Conway-Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo and party spokesperson on higher education. Daniel McConnell is political editor with the Irish Examiner. Sarah Carey, columnist and communications consultant, is here. And also Paul McCall of Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Northwest. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in this Friday. So we were discussing earlier on, the government has signalled that it wants to see major dividends for all workers arising from the pandemic, and this includes flexible working, occupational pensions, statutory sick pay, and a move to a living wage. The Taoiseach was talking about this at a speech he gave to IBEC. But there's confusion around this one-off entitlement. People who are seen to have gone above and beyond during the worst days of the pandemic. And Paul, I come to you first on this, because it seems from what's been said, and we're trying to decipher all of the statements around this, that the government wants to do something, but they're worried that if they do something, they'll have to do it for everybody and it'll cost a fortune.
Yeah, I suppose it's like all the decisions in budget, is that you want to prioritise, but at the same token, you want to try and capture as many people as possible. I absolutely want to see the sacrifices, particularly of healthcare workers, acknowledged in the budget and in the way we respond to this. But like, you also have to think about those other people that took sacrifices. And I keep coming back to the person working in the supermarket in those first few weeks of the pandemic, when we were all, you know, largely locked in our homes. They thought this was living on surfaces. You know, people were washing the produce that they were pushing on shelves. So I think we have to be careful not to divide. There's been two previous points in the pandemic. The identification of essential workers was there was real social division about that. You know, who was an essential worker and who wasn't, and the initial phases of the vaccination very much turned into that debate as well. So, and we have to be careful that in trying to acknowledge people's contributions, we don't end up dividing.
So
people.
The notion of an extra bank holiday, that doesn't cut it, because you have said earlier you want frontline healthcare workers to be recognised. Now, if everyone gets a bank holiday, that means they don't get anything special.
Yeah, look, I think whether it's a public day of reflection to reflect on those people we lost during the pandemic, I think that's something that may happen. But I don't think that's the same thing as what we're talking about here. A day of reflection, a day of remembrance, I don't believe would respond in the way that the government want to respond. And don't forget, it's the government, or certainly sources within the government, that are bringing forward this idea and this concept.
Are you talking about an annual day of reflection, i.e. a bank holiday?
Yeah, I know there's been some talk of a public holiday to reflect on that. So I think that's not the same as what we're trying to do here. Mm-hmm. Look, there's a broader issue here as well. There's about investing in public services, investing in our health services, making the health services a place where people want to work, where we don't have huge waiting lists, where people aren't under huge stress and pressure. And we do have to balance that. And we also have to recognise the cost of living increases as well. So there's a lot in this.
Rose, what's your view on this? The unions aren't wedded to the idea of 10 days leave. They haven't said what they want, really. They just want this addressed. What do you think should happen?
I think there needs to be some serious negotiation. And I think instead of government, flying kites and platitudes, I think it's important that there's proper engagement there with the unions and the workers' representatives to see what they need. I absolutely think, and Sinn Féin thinks, that there needs to be recognition of those who went above and beyond during the pandemic. So we would say yes to a bank holiday, but I think it needs to be more than that. And I suppose in our minds, we all have the standout workers. For me, it will always be the healthcare assistants, for the reason that particularly when we had the people dying, so many people dying in nursing homes, they were the ones that were left holding the hands of the dying. And I know many of them who are now suffering post-traumatic stress. And
covered by a public health deal, you know, between the HSE and government.
Yeah, but they need to be acknowledged. We cannot come out the other side of the pandemic with those people still on the minimum wage, and even some of them on less than the minimum wage. So we need to take from that. Paul is right in terms of the health service. It absolutely exposed the health service and, I suppose, health policies over governments and over generations in that we didn't have a health service fit for purpose.
I don't know if you heard Neil MacDonald from ISMI earlier on the programme saying there's a whiff of 2006 off the suggestion that an additional bank holiday is needed. And he's saying the message is, let's all keep spending money.
I think it's much wider than that, and I think there has to be. But the way this will be solved will be not through the kite flying and platitudes. It will be by sitting down and negotiating and talking about this. And I know it's a challenge, and it's certainly a challenge of who is recognised and maybe who is not. So, but I do think for those healthcare workers as well, they want the system to change. I mean, there's no point in giving them 10 days holidays and then they're coming back into a system.
According to the messages we got this morning, that's what people want in the main. Daniel, I want to come to you on this because Rose has mentioned kite flying there, and there are an awful lot of suggestions around what could be done, what can't be done, what's going to cost too much, where does it stop and so on. Can you enlighten us as to what's on the table?
Sure. So this began a number of months ago, a number of weeks ago, when the Taoiseach sort of said and made clear that it could take the form of either a cash payment or some form of paid leave. When we were writing about this in our lead story on Monday, it was very much still along those lines. And what we were being told at that stage was, you know, the government was looking to pay for it out of monies they have left over essentially from this year. The budget deficit isn't as bad as it's likely to be, or as it was originally supposed to be thought. So it had some flexibility in the numbers this year. And that was along the basis of kind of a much smaller group of people. I think what the debate of the last few days has shown is that, you know, where do you draw the line is going to be really problematic. And if you start getting into the space where you're rewarding all public sector workers, you risk, and I think this has been articulated by a number of people in government last night, you risk almost making it a public versus private sector divide again. So the difficulty there is, or the solution would be there, and that's where I think the idea of the bank holiday is coming in, is that you give something for everybody, but therefore are you therefore diluting the sort of signal or the intent of a gesture to those, or a recognition of those on the front lines who did go above and beyond the call of duty. So, you know, we know it's likely to either form part of the Budget Day announcement or will be somewhere around that if agreement can be formed or reached with the unions. And I suppose the difficulty is, I suppose, the key call will really be is just where do you draw that line?
Yes.
And ultimately, I think that's the difficulty for Michael McGrath and the other leaders in government.
And that, Sarah, is going to be hugely problematic, isn't it? Where does this stop?
Exactly. And I think everyone has aired already the problems, the competition between different sectors, that issue about the retail workers, you know, and the healthcare assistants, as Rose is saying, they're private employers. Here's the bottom line. Whatever is done, we'll all be paying for. The cheque for all of this will have to be written. Giving people extra holidays means longer waiting lists. So I think we may have to be a little bit more stoic and a little bit more practical. And it may mean saying hard things, and it may mean saying, no, there aren't any extra holidays. And if something is done, we're all writing the cheque for that, everybody.
Mm-hmm. So no extra holidays, you're saying, because waiting lists
would
increase.
I like this idea.
That's a logical argument, right?
Yeah.
But what about then, if you can't do that, give them a bonus payment?
If it's one-off, and it's very, very clearly agreed that it is one-off, but if you give them a one-off payment, what about the people in social welfare who process 600,000 PUP payments in less than a week? What about the people in revenue? You know, like, the list is endless. It really, really is. So it can be done, but you will just pay it back in the next 5 years in your taxes.
Paul. I think...
Sorry, go ahead, Rose.
If one thing that came out of the pandemic was the value of social care workers, the value of the people who really kept the country going, who before the pandemic people just took for granted. So we can't come out the other side of the pandemic thinking, you know, forgetting about that, forgetting about their value. So it's about asking them what would make a difference to them. So somebody having a bank holiday, as I said, and then coming back into a healthcare system that's in chaos the following day.
Yeah, I really agree with that.
Holiday,
yeah, focus on sláinte care, you know, to, and put the money into that so their everyday life is better.
Well,
I think that's a good
point. That might be a solution then, that you're not doing a one-off payment, you're not doing days off, but you're lifting conditions for everybody working in that system.
But we have to ask.
And you're also benefiting those people who use those services. And I think, look, the pandemic has shifted a lot of people's thinking. But don't forget, before the pandemic, we had the general election, and there was clearly a message in that general election about increasing investment in public services. And I think as we move away from pandemic budgets into back to normal budgets, we're going to start to see, I suppose, the priorities of each of the parties in government, and we'll start to see those play out very much from Fianna Fáil's perspective, we want to see that, you know, for example, the 2 extra billion that was given to health last year, mm-hmm. we want to see that embedded and we want to see it continued. So I think the investment in public services can't be forgotten in the debate of acknowledging, because there's no point sending people back into work in conditions that need to be improved.
And I'm just amazed at the number of messages I've had from frontline workers today from 10 o'clock this morning saying, I don't want anything. I want the conditions to improve.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well, listen to them. Listen to them and don't give in to special pleading and populism now and listen to that common sense.
And the difficulty as well, sorry, Claire, if I could just come in, and the difficulty for the government's going to be is if they get this wrong, if they start, you know, trying to pit one sector against the other, you know, the good intentions of trying to reward this, the very sectors and the very people who did go above and beyond the call of duty could end up being a very divisive, toxic discussion where nobody wins ultimately at the end of the day. And that's, I think, the line that Michael McGrath and Pascal Dunne have to walk in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, Daniel, as well about that speech that Leo Varadkar made to the employers group IBEC last night, saying he wanted to build a new economy, more inclusive, more secure, a just society, borrowing a phrase there from Declan Costello. And he was very, he vehemently said that this is what he wants to focus on his last 18 months in office before the transition back to Taoiseach.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you say all of it sounds fantastic, but I mean, this is someone who's been in government for the last 11 years and, you know, progress in relation to getting all of that has been, you know, painfully slow. And ultimately, I think from Fine Gael's perspective, the idea of the just society, you know, you look at their record on housing, you look at their record on health, and you look at their record in terms of delivering education. You know, they've fudged the higher education funding issue for more than 5 or 6 years now. So, I mean, aspirations are good on one front, but, like, you know, delivery on in terms of their track record, you know, really is painfully slow and is not really stellar at all. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think the key questions a lot of people are now asking is that, you know, we're trying to wean a country off, you know, we've essentially been living on Skittles for the last 18 months or so, and we're trying to get people back onto a normal diet, a normal budget. And you know, what we're seeing from the opposition is just this endless call for these continued, you know, extraordinary sports to remain and remain in place. And yet we look at our national debt. Pascal Dunne told the Budget Oversight Committee, you know, the national debt now stands at roughly €50,000 for every man, woman and child in this country. Like, it has quadrupled almost since the start of the financial crash in 2008. And that's just not sustainable.
Sarah, if the government and the Taoiseach, if their task is to wean the country off Skittles, why is he saying all of this stuff?
I'm amazed at the extent to which government politicians forget that there's a substantial constituency of people who absolutely love it when people talk straight and tell hard truths and don't need to be pawned off with populism and, as Rose is saying, flying kites and platitudes and all of that. If they're told the hard truth that we owe too much money and the cheque for this has to be written, I think a lot of people and enough people would understand that and be prepared to knuckle down, as they did during the financial crisis, and get on with paying for it.
The flip side to that, though, Sarah, is, and we talked earlier about sounding like 2006, we equally don't want to sound like 2011 and 2012, because we know that pro-cyclical austerity policies did have an impact, and we have to learn that lesson too. So it's important to be fiscally responsible, but equally the idea of imposing austerity didn't work 10 years ago.
But Paul, where's the fiscal responsibility? Like, I mean, like,
yeah,
Pascal
Dunne,
Pascal
Dunne, Michael McGrath,
like, where's the fiscal responsibility in the budgets that are coming in? And we know, you know, budget spending this term around is going to increase by, you know, €4.5 billion plus this year. And where's the responsibility? All of that is just being added onto the debt pile.
And there's all that pent up demand.
Yet. It's important to say.
But there's all that pent up demand of all the people who were stuck at home for 18 months and couldn't spend their money, even though they were being paid in full. This isn't a demand issue. There's not, you know, that's not
Rose,
the problem here.
I think the next couple of weeks will tell an awful lot, because we'll see where the choices that are made in the budget, and we'll see. I think what people want is fairness, but there's an awful lot of people who are really, really struggling. We saw yesterday even the students in terms of student accommodation, mm-hmm. the affordability and the availability of it. These are all families. They're families that are really struggling, that are facing into a winter, who, as well because of the healthcare system and the way that it is, have to try and take out loans to get vital healthcare. All of those things are building up. So the household debt, like the household debt and what people are going through in their own households is extremely severe at the moment. And I think any budget needs, and certainly our own budget will take.
If you had a limited pot of money to spend in a budget, would you be giving a fiver extra to every pensioner in the country?
Yeah, I think it's important.
She's supposed to become money to everybody.
I think it's important to do that, and it's only a fiver. But I think things like, and I think we're going to talk about energy in terms of the costs as well.
But because you can solve the energy problem, and people will have huge energy bills, and you can solve that by a targeted fuel allowance increase for people who are struggling. But an extra fiver for every pension, even the really rich pensioners.
And we really need to say this. The group in society least at risk of poverty are pensioners. The group in society most at risk of poverty are children. Giving every pensioner in the country, they're the group who are actually the richest in society, is just crazy. Yeah,
but it's those not pensioners even that rely on the pension rely on that increase as well.
And but look, it's only about 9% of them. Don't give it to everybody.
I think one of our biggest challenges is inflation, and it's going to be. So I think anybody begrudging €5 to a pensioner, I think, is wrong.
But it doesn't work, Rose. So the problem is,
Daniel is just talking to you there. You don't have your headphones on.
And sorry. As well.
No, go ahead, Daniel.
Sorry, I was just going to make the point that every year the Department of Social Protection says, you know, slapping an extra fiver on the pension doesn't tackle poverty. It just kind of gets spread too far, too thin, whereas you're much better off, as they did last year, was picking targeted groups and get the money to the people who need it. Yeah. And Sarah's right,
but I think that can be done as well, Daniel. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. So even if we were to look at, you know, introducing, as we did, legislation around the ban on utility disconnection, or to widen the eligibility for the fuel allowance, I think that can be done in a targeted way as well. Or the discretionary fund that we talked about,
Rose,
in terms of having the community welfare
office. But why do as well? Like Claire's question was, there's a limited pot of money. So don't do the as well. Forget about the money to people who don't need it and do exactly as you say.
And Sarah, that's what we will be. And I think this is our 11th, Piers Doherty's 11th alternative budget that will be reduced in the next 2 weeks. It will be fully costed. Every item within that.
Rose, with respect,
and we will target it at people budgets. Families who are really struggling.
Go ahead, Paul.
Rose, alternative budgets deliver nothing for anybody. The only thing the alternative budgets deliver for is Sinn Féin. What you need to do is be in government to deliver budgets. And
you made sure you were going to keep us out by going in with Fine Gael. So hopefully
Rose,
the next time things
respect,
will change.
Rose,
and it won't be
you held rallies
from
every part of the country, telling everybody else who you wouldn't go into government, and did nothing to meet anybody.
Oh, no,
the reality
is, to anyone, you know that,
respect,
Paul. But you're in government now. You make the decisions.
And that's the point. And that is my point.
And we hold you to account. And that's what we do.
Well, Rose, actually, it'll be the people who elected me will hold me to account.
No.
The reality, if you let me talk about the budget, Rose. There hasn't been an increase in the old age pension in 2 years. We do need to acknowledge it. Mm. We're going to be looking at how we deal with the cost of living, particularly around fuel costs. I think it's right in that space that we do look at an increase in the pension.
Yeah, it's just, I suppose, if you're doing universal increases, it's going to be at the expense of something else.
Yeah, and the same can apply for lots of areas. So we will see the colour of the government's money and the priorities that they have in the budget. It's hard to talk about that in advance of the decisions being made, but the reality is that within Fianna Fáil, in any case, we do want to make sure that older people receive an increase, but we also want to invest in public services. And I think particularly childcare and how we move out of the pandemic arrangements on childcare and the way that's funded at the moment and all of the complexity of the NCS scheme and all the rest of it, we need to have a major look at that and how that makes childcare more affordable for
you need to do it. I just think it's quite ironic we're here discussing around fuel poverty and €5 for pensioners. And I know I come from the area with the Carb Gas project. They won't pay corporation tax for something like 20-25 years. We were told that we'll do that project and accept that project by Fianna Fáil because we'll have fuel security going into the future. You know, so it's the balances between we concentrate on the fiver and then we let big companies like the Carb Gas project away without paying corporation tax for 20-25 years. That was a Fianna Fáil decision. Paul,
it was, and as you know,
that would pay a hell of a lot.
As you know, Rose, it's very easy to throw out the line of them paying no corporation tax, but that was one of the conditions of exploration. And we also know the complete failure rate in exploration and how seldom gas finds are found. So, like, it's a very easy line to throw out
about
corporation. What we need to look at in this budget, as I say, is continue to embed the investment in health. It was €2 billion last year. It's a huge investment. We need to continue that, and we need to look, in my view, I think childcare, we need to look at how we fund that into the longer term and move away from schemes that are sort of that mix and match and actually start to look at how we perhaps even nationalise or nationally fund childcare.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about the MICA situation because I know, Rose, particularly in your area, you'll be dealing with this. And Daniel, your colleague, Aoife Moore, at the Examiner broke a story on Twitter yesterday suggesting that this 100% compensation scheme for most but not all MICA homeowners is now being considered by the government. Now, there has been, I mean, we're talking to Barry Lenehan so much about this story, and we've come to the conclusion that this is really a hot potato politically, isn't it? Because it is very, very possible that the government could lose TDs over this.
It is very possible, and I think that's the dilemma that is facing the government. I think if you've people like Charlie McConnell, the agricultural minister, who's in cabinet, you've people like Derek Leary, who's in Mayo, Joe Kerry in Clare, you've Joe McHugh also in Donegal. You have a lot of government TDs, ministers and former ministers, who have made it very clear that nothing but 100% redress is what is needed. What seems to be emerging, Claire, is that the government is just concerned as to the size of this. And what two of the options that were emerging was that it would be done at a cap. The figure of up to €500,000 was being suggested to us, and then also it could be done on a per square meter rate. And ultimately, that, because I think one of the issues that did emerge early in the summer was that yes, there are an awful lot of what we consider normal size or average sized homes involved in this. There are quite a number of these one off very large 3,000 foot square homes in the Donegal area in particular. And there is a question being asked, is it fair for the taxpayer to essentially have to rebuild kind of large family homes? Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the scheme is going, whether or not that's sufficient enough, because I think the feeling is that those sort of caps will bring in most, if not all, of the people, as that quote in our paper said yesterday. But there will always be that small number of people who are on the edges that may just remain outside. But whether or not that's sufficient to keep a large number of TDs on board remains to be seen. But there's no doubt about this. If the government kind of don't go far enough in relation to this, it's very likely you will see further jumpers off from the government benches.
This is a sticky one, Paul.
It absolutely is. And I know Derek Leary and Senator Niall Blaney and Senator Robbie Gallagher had a meeting with our housing subcommittee of the parliamentary party on Tuesday, as we have each week. And it was heartbreaking listening to some of the stories. And look, Dara O'Brien is the minister responsibility. I suppose he hasn't commented publicly because there is a process. And that process, families had their opportunity last week to put forward their case. That was the deadline was extended to allow them to do that. And I suppose it has to be, we can't just hear their views and then to have a decision made. So my view on this is that there will be moves on this, and it will be substantial.
And 3,000 square metre house, a huge house, should that be paid for?
I think that's a red herring. We have to remember these families have been suffering for a decade now, watching their homes crumbling, watching their families crumbling. I'm waiting for the report. I am hopeful that the report will do the 100% redress and the other inclusions that need to be made within the scheme.
No caps.
That is the only way.
No size caps.
It's the only
way
forward.
Caps.
I mean, it isn't all of the houses that I know. I mean, I'm familiar with the houses in Donegal, but all the houses I know are very modest family homes. People have invested in those homes. What people are suffering. I really want to commend the action groups, because even outside Leinster House in the last number of days, the people you speak to, they're there. One couple had their fifth wedding anniversary, leave their two young children at home to come up to protest outside the gates of Leinster House. Another woman on her own, she said, I can't go back to the bank. I have a mortgage already. She's on her own trying to pay that mortgage. So this has to be fixed, and the suffering has to be brought to an end. What happened in Mayo County Council, where 20 people or 19 people got refused and then had to appeal. Now, thankfully, those appeal results came back in the last week that they got accepted. That should never have happened. The way these families have been treated is absolutely abominable.
And Claire, any scheme that's implemented that makes the same mistakes that officials made in the previous scheme is going to fail again. And we have to look at how the scheme is implemented, because it wasn't interpreted correctly. But what's at the heart of, I think, a lot of it is a feeling that when the Pyrite issue developed in Dublin, that was met, and that because these homes are in Donegal, people are being forgotten. I think that's the fear, and we have to make sure that that's not the case.
I just see a note here that Minister Patrick O'Donovan was on Limerick's Live 95 today, and he said addressing the problems caused by MICA and Pyrite could be the biggest challenge the government will face.
It's going to be a huge bill, and we are bailing out the insurance companies on this. We're bailing out the mortgage lenders on this, who, remember, are the people who actually own the homes, and they're supposed to get certifications to say that these homes have been built properly, and they didn't. This is the real issue behind this, actually. that there's no proper independent certification of building standards in this country. Up until 2014, there was nothing at all. After 2014, there was a certification process, but the professionals are employed by the builders and the developers, so they can be replaced if necessary. So you can still certify your own work.
But is that not a problem, a state problem?
Yes, it is. So my point is, we're going to have to write a check for this one, but the next pyrite, the next mica could be happening right now, and mortgage lenders still aren't getting proper independent. Like, you know, my husband is a civil engineer, and he was saying when they were training, you had somebody out testing the foundations, you had somebody out testing the bricks, you had somebody out testing every stage of the construction process. We're still not doing that. It's still a version of self-certification.
So should there be some sort of a levy imposed on the banks and the insurance companies paid into a fund to cover this type
but
of incident in the future?
I saw Charlie Weston in The Independent saying we're paying six different insurance levies at the moment. And that's what this is. One of the pyrite developers took his insurance company to, or sorry, one of the building developers who ended up with pyrite, because they didn't know they were putting pyrite in. The quarry sold them a product. They didn't know what it was. Went to the Supreme Court with the insurance company, and they didn't have to pay out. This is another levy. We're paying for it again.
But that's because there isn't proper, or there hasn't been proper government regulation. So these people have all been failed by the state. Mm-hmm. So the state needs to tackle the banks and the insurance companies to get the payment for it as well. But in the meantime, these families have to be able to get on with their lives. Mm-hmm. They're broken.
I think that's the paramount. There's people going to bed at night wondering what way the wind will blow because they're unsure of the safety of their home. That we have to address that.
Okay, I am going to have to leave it there, but thank you all very much indeed for coming in. Paul McAuliffe, Rose Conway-Walsh, Sarah Carey and Daniel McConnell. That's it from us for the week. We'll take a quick look at a headline here coming to me. The HSE says a third dose of the COVID-19 vaccine for vulnerable people at highest risk could begin as early as next Friday. And that's it for the week. Thank you very much for listening. Today's programme was produced by Caroline Dalton. Research was by Amy Ryan. On sound was Pather Carney. Our broadcast coordinator is Louise Kerr-Ross. And now it's over to Ronan Collins.